hand, but yet on the other hand, science and technology has also created lots of human suffering, to put it mildly. And so we began last time to explore how we deal with the enterprise, and particularly how we deal with what seems to be this expert-non-expert dichotomy, that we tend to leave everything up to the experts because we can't participate in that discussion. And one thing we talked about yesterday was that if we perhaps thought about science more as a social institution and thought about the web of human activity surrounding science, then we could all become part of the discussions about the uses of science and technology. So that was yesterday. Today what I'd like to look at is creating knowledge in science, and the reason why I choose this as our next step is that if we are going to be, all of us, part of the discussion about science and technology in society, we do have to understand a little bit about the knowledge and how it's created. That certainly when you think about scientific technological literacy, you might think, well, does that mean I have to go back to my science book and pick up all those facts that, of course, have changed by now, depending on how long you've been out of school. And what I would like to show today is that really what we need, in addition to knowing facts, is we need to know how the knowledge is generated, because it changes so rapidly that if I tell you all today about any particular biological system, tomorrow our understanding changes, and how much has that helped you. So what I'd really like to focus on today is really getting a better understanding of how the knowledge is generated. And where I would like to start with that is thinking about what is the realm of science. What is it that science can ask questions about? Because if we're going to talk about scientific knowledge, we need to be very clear about what kind of questions we can ask in science. And I think in this day and age, if you go out into a grocery store, for example, and look at the magazines as you wait in the checkout counter, you might get the impression that science can ask questions about anything. I'm reminded of a headline I saw a couple years back in one of those tabloids which said, East German scientists discover the weight of the soul. The article went on to describe how the scientists had weighed dead bodies, right before they died and then right after, and therefore determined the weight of the soul. Now, if you understand that science can only ask certain questions, then you see that that's kind of a ridiculous question. So I think it is useful in this day and age, at least I find for young people it's useful to be very clear about what is the realm of science and what is not the realm of science. Or perhaps another way of thinking about this is, using a very cliche phrase at this point, I suppose, is that science is one way of knowing, that there are many different ways of knowing ourselves and our world. Science is one way of knowing, that we're not making that distinction, that it seems as if in our society science has become the only way to know things. And so we need to remind ourselves that it's one way to know things. So we could take some time to talk about what the realm of science is, but I want to move on to other more interesting things, I think. So let me just say that the framework I work out of is that science can ask questions about natural phenomena. Right? So science can ask questions about the inanimate objects in the world as well as ourselves, but we're not going to ask questions about God in science. And I try to make this point, at least in my setting, which is a liberal arts college, because we do talk about evolution in our courses, and without making this distinction, you know, we run into a lot of heated debate and angry and upset students. So I really try to make the distinction that in science what we're looking at is natural phenomena. So what I mainly want to focus on, having said that now, is how is this knowledge about natural phenomena established? And I really don't want to do a lot of talking here. What I want us to do is explore the question of how do we establish knowledge about natural phenomena. And the way I'd like to do this is to do what I call the mystery box activity. I'd like for us to do some exploration first, and then we'll come back together and talk about what you found out in your exploration, and then I'll provide some theory to go along with that. So what I'd like you to do is break up maybe into groups of three or four, and it really works well if we can have one person in your group just be an observer, just watch. So if you feel like you're a very good observer, you know, maybe you want to self-appoint yourself. If you've done this mystery box thing before, maybe you also want to be the observer in that case, all right? So what I'm going to do is give you each a box, and this is the natural phenomenon that we want to explore. So here's the natural phenomenon. And what I'd like you to do in your groups is I'd like you to develop an explanation for what's in the box, all right? Because this is what science does. Science develops explanations for natural phenomena. So I'd like you to develop an explanation for what's in the box. You're free to use your senses. You may even want to draw a picture. I don't know if we can. We've got some marking pens here. Certainly we can find some Xerox to scratch on. And then as you work towards your explanation, maybe towards the end of your time, you might ask yourselves, what could you do to become more certain about your explanation? Right? And let me say right off, you may not open the box. This is a mystery box. So opening the box is not a way to become more certain.
I don't know if it's going to be like in the nature centers where you reach in and you don't see it, you get to feel it.
Yeah, no, we can't do it that way with this particular mystery box. All right? So maybe divide yourselves up in three or four, maybe come and get a box, and then why don't you work for a few minutes on this process. But let's stop. Okay, you can take your box with you if you want and work on it some more. But I think we need to stop. No, you can't open it.
And
Maybe before we reflect on what we've just done, why don't we take a minute to maybe talk about some of your ideas about how you can become more certain about your explanation?
Open the box.
Open the box. Can't do that.
But that's how I become more certain.
But that's not allowed. So what other kinds of things could you do?
Squish it.
Okay, these folks up here have squished their box.
Well, that's not fair.
Well, they don't open it.
Why isn't it fair?
They didn't open it.
Because we didn't.
What else? Yeah.
I would, if I had the opportunity to just, I would take what I think it is and put it in another box and see if it was, had the same.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So find something that you think it could be like and then put it in another box. So maybe try to replicate the situation.
Yes, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Okay. What other kinds of things do you think you might be able to do? Yeah.
You find a box like that, weigh that box, and then weigh this box and determine the, more precisely the weight of your object.
Okay. All right. Finding the weight of the object. Okay.
Floated in water.
Floated in water?
See if it dissolves.
Let's find out what was in it.
Is that what you'd like to do, to see if it dissolves?
No,
I'm just thinking to get the density of it.
Oh, you want to get the density, okay. All right.
It's light and water. It doesn't mess.
The box might disintegrate. So
shake it so you know if it's one or two objects.
Okay. As you've been doing, shaking, okay. Yeah, where's the other hand?
We weighed it by using a teeter-totter method in coins.
Okay, so they did figure out the weight over here. What other kinds of things? I think you folks had some very creative
ideas.
One was a large survey of other people think what they would think would be in it.
Okay, comparing with other people.
Yeah, that's good.
All right. Really getting more data, maybe? More shaking data, maybe.
Smells, too.
All right, other kinds of senses. Tell us some more about your other.
We had an airport experiment worked out where we were going to first run it through the x-ray machine and then take it up in the plane and see the effects on pressure and altitude and then let it crash.
See if it breaks
into more pieces.
Shatters.
All right. Anything else you'd like to try? All right. What's that?
Ultrasound.
Ultrasound, right. We're getting into some high-tech solutions here, high-tech.
Yeah, we also thought of we could design a computer program to analyze with.
Okay, so using a computer simulation, good? Yeah.
Actually, we didn't think of it in a group, but there seemed to be a real faint smell out of ours, and we didn't really think that crushing the box was adequate. It was
was allowed. But if it is, I'd probably want to smash all these things with a hammer, and we'd probably find out what it smelled like.
Okay, all right.
But that would also destroy the sample.
It would destroy the sample, right.
Now good. Can we take the box with us?
Sure, you can take the box. All right, well, that's good. Let's take some time now to reflect on what we've done. Let's look at question number one first. In what ways is what you've just now done like doing science?
Pulling theories out of the air.
Okay, all right. Let me just... Could you say more what you mean by pulling theories out of the air?
Well, it just seemed to me that we really didn't have a hell of a lot to operate on.
Uh-huh.
I think we used deductive reasoning.
Okay. So we had some deduction going on. What other ways was the activity like doing science?
We were limited by resources. We didn't have enough money to.
Okay. Limited resources. Good.
Time. We were limited by time.
Okay.
So we're collaborating.
Collaboration. Right.
We also had this supervisor who kept coming around.
Yeah, telling us what we had
to do. Bringing down our necks.
We had these restrictions.
Okay. All right. What else? What other ways is this like doing science?
Didn't have much to do with real life problems.
Okay. But it's exactly like Christmas.
Yeah, exactly like Christmas.
Justin, in science, you probably never really know the real answer.
All right, you notice how I phrased the question here. I didn't ask you, how could you know if you were correct or not? I asked you, how could you become more certain? All right, so...
there was a lot of anticipation.
Uh-huh.
You wanted to know what was it.
Uh-huh, so there was kind of a motivation to keep going.
Yes, it was exciting.
Okay.
Yeah, not accepting less than absolute.
Yes.
A lot of repeated testing.
Okay, good.
It was frustrating.
Okay.
Gathering data is preliminary to formulating a hypothesis.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's see, now you're coming out pretty quickly here. Repeated testing.
Testing hypothesis.
Well, yeah, and then actually going back to question one, I think you you really set up sort of what the null hypothesis, and you try to reject it.
Right.
And so you say, well, it can't be three beans in there, and right away you can kind of eliminate.
Okay, did you find yourself putting forth an idea and then thinking about all the reasons why it couldn't be that idea?
I found myself, I put forth the idea and these guys would tell me all the reasons why it couldn't be that.
Okay. All right,
okay. Okay. Rejected
little, my you didn't write down your own
thing. That's
pretty about this. That's a little gentle. So
it's like part of that community.
Right. Anything else in terms of how was it like doing science? You can think of?
There was some collaboration.
Okay. Right. And what was the importance of that collaboration to the progress of your idea?
Well, we were ready to cheat back here in this corner. Well, I mean, don't you think scientists? We were talking about you know, you go ahead and set up the experiment and get the results that.
Okay.
It was an equalizer. Nobody felt superior.
Okay. You were all in the dark. Good.
On the other hand, working on Nancy's idea, there is a kind of leveling that occurs in which there is a shared set of assumptions, which means that certain explanations, like this is a material angel which goes back and forth, something like that, are immediately ruled out. And so there's kind of there's the potential of debunking. So what might be a true case might be ruled out as absurd.
Right. You get off on the wrong track because everyone's sharing the same assumptions. Okay, good.
Now, is that supposed to, you say it's a danger with collaboration that we'd all get locked into the same assumptions, or a good thing? See, in our group, it was a good thing we had, because, for example, we all assumed, as soon as we determined there was more than one object, that they all three had to be the same object. Well, someone pointed out that that was an assumption. We didn't have any evidence for it. I think it was better that we had three than just one.
I guess the point I would want to make with collaboration and this idea would be, the more diverse your group is, the less likely you're going to have that shared set of assumptions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Another thing is that we always try and figure it out in terms of what we know from our own experience. To identify in terms of objects we know, so we're building our knowledge on the basis of our past experience.
Okay. And what does that say if the people who are doing that have common experiences, or if it's only one kind of experience or one kind of person? Okay, these are all interesting things that we could actually talk about, each one of them individually. Let's just take a minute here. There's so much to talk about. Let's just take a minute here to go through 2 and 3, and then I want to come back to a point that we've made here. How did you feel during the process? How did you feel? We've heard frustration, we've heard a kind of anticipation, you were motivated to keep going because there was this unknown thing. What other kinds of feelings did you experience? Did you
sense of progress.
Okay, you felt progress, okay?
Excitement.
Okay. Can you identify where in the process you felt this excitement?
When you're actually, when your senses are really dabbling in what this is, when you're hearing it and maybe seeing it and smell it. You just, imagination is at work real in intense fashion and trying to visualize what's inside of it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I think some of the excitement came when you sort of made a little progress in the discovery.
Uh-huh. And when you post a grid, it was exciting when you post a grid on the same scene, in a way.
The team was working together?
I think there was a drive on that other groups might be coming up with better answers.
Competition.
Competition. Okay. Good. Good. What else? Yeah.
When we finally decided to puncture our box, we all four huddled together to hide it from you. Like little kids. Uh-huh. It was really fascinating. Uh-huh. We didn't plan to do it. We just did it. So we had it. I don't know what emotion that is, but
all right.
Fear.
Fear?
We just thought about punching our box. We never would punch our box.
All right.
That was just a little satisfaction. We were pretty certain that we discovered what it was.
Okay. Over here, they were talking about how they were feeling some satisfaction as they were moving along, and then when they were pretty certain they had the idea, there was this huge letdown because they were done. At least they thought they were done.
Did you share each other?
That's pretty accurate.
Did you feel frustration just watching? Did you want to get in?
No, I was questioning the squeezing of the box. But was there very that's the point of that there was no rule against it. Okay.
I'm only the observer. We don't have ethics.
Let's work on the observers now. What kinds of things did you all as observers notice? What kind of things did the observers notice?
They shook it, they looked and listened, they squeezed it and felt it, they went side to side, listening to the rolling, decided which square it was and the size of it, had no odor. Were sure it was two objects at first, and then they were sure it was one. And they listened, they threw it in the air and heard it drop. But when they squeezed it, they came pretty sure of what it is.
Okay, all right. So you really saw them trying to figure out what was going on. Okay, good. Yeah, did you?
In the beginning, individually they would take and try to do it on their own. And, well, I think it's this and I think it's that. And then they started to work together and say, well, I think this is happening, and what do you think? Does it, you agree with your observations, agree? And the progress from sort of individual to group effort.
Okay, good. What else from observers? What else did you notice? Anything else? Your observer left.
She was very, very tired.
She couldn't observe.
Conflict of interest.
Anything else from the observers? Okay. What I'd like to do is really just focus on one thing, although, as I said, there are lots of things that we could pick out here. We could talk about collaboration, we could talk about your ideas and things like that. But what I'd like to focus on is something about the process that you were all engaged in. And that is, I noticed it most clearly back here in the back, with people going like this. They're shaking the box and closing their eyes and really, you know, that what we're doing here is working in the abstract.
All right, you don't know we're four ESP experts. Uh-huh.
And you were still working in the abstract, right? Did you notice how you were building this picture in the abstract, and still to this point, it's abstract, right? So the point that I would like to make here is that when science builds explanations, they use abstract ideas. There are abstract ideas that go into our explanations. Now, believe it or not, this comes as a shock to many people. For example, in my field of atoms and molecules, for example, I think we could argue about the level of abstraction, but certainly the theory is an abstraction. It's an abstract thing that scientists use abstract ideas to explain natural phenomena. This has, as one of, I was trying to explain to a student in a non-science major course about this. We were talking about atoms and molecules, and the student said to me, "Do you mean it's just made up?" It's just made up because it works. It works to explain things. All right? What are some of the consequences of this? If we're using abstract ideas to explain natural phenomenon, I think one of the consequences is that for a learner in science, all right, we're always dealing in the abstract. I mean, if you ever remember your chemistry experiences, you're always talking about these atoms and molecules and you can never see them. All right? So that then the process of learning becomes unpacking these abstract ideas and being introduced to abstract ideas, all right? Another consequence might be, and we could talk more about this one, since we're using abstract ideas to explain natural phenomenon, language, of course, is very important, all right? And as we use language to describe these things, then the language sometimes can presuppose the normative, that is, the language that we impose on our explanation can be value-laden. Let me give you an example here. Of course, it's one that we still use currently, and that is we talk about nature, for example, as Mother Nature. Right? Before the scientific revolution, Mother Nature meant nurturing, caring, this wonderful, beautiful thing that we wanted to take care of, that going out and mining the earth was really a desecration of the mother, and that was something that you took great care about. You didn't want to do that. So the idea of mother in that language presupposed some values about how you care about the environment. And then I think if you trace the history of the idea of Mother Nature, what happens next is that Mother Nature is woman, and woman is wild and uncontrollable. So what you then begin to do is control nature. So the language, Mother Nature as wild, uncontrollable woman, presupposes some ideas about the values, right? That come from your ideas. And I think that's an idea that I'd like to explore in depth a little bit later in another session. So the point I wanted to make with all of this, because to many people this is a revelation, is that we use abstract ideas to explain things, to explain natural phenomena. Can I ask you, is it revelatory to you? Or are you all so familiar with the scientific enterprise that it's not anything new? Any questions or comments about this abstraction? Yeah?
I think it's awfully frustrating, having been in, I was a biology major and participated in a humanities program, just how frustrating it is for people in the liberal arts to, well, this is a huge topic and in itself, but to rule off science as mere data collection and the idea of abstraction just doesn't occur to them as anything challenging or even tangible. Mm-hmm. I thought that was, it's very frustrating.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
The other thing that
strikes me from doing this exercise is that maybe abstract ideas, but also there's a great deal of imagination that's involved in moving from what we know to these abstract ideas. And when you said this about your students saying, well, it's all made up, then it made me think about my students who say, oh, if there's no, if that's the case, then the Bible can mean whatever I want it to mean. That there's that same kind of leap when confronted with the possibility that there's not an absolute, then there must be nothing. I don't know if we'll go with that, but it's a very interesting parallel to how students respond to biblical interpretation. It's all made up that I can do whatever I want.
Right, right. I think what I try to do then is to say that, again, what ideas that explain, and then because we have this community of scientists, we've got to have some consensus about what we're going to accept as good abstract ideas.
And I suppose the other thing would be that there are some things that we know definitely weren't in that box, so that you can always say there are limits to these ideas.
Good.
In a way that it's harder to tell students about a text that
good.
There are limits.
Good, good, yeah.
Oh, Ted's question.
Well, I just am a little bit confused about your use of abstraction. I mean, as Leanne said, that sounds to me like it's kind of an imaginative conclusion that you're drawing. You know, that's based upon sound and a number of things. What do you mean by an abstraction?
That you can never be certain.
So an abstraction is something that you're not certain about.
An abstraction is something that's part of it. Uh-huh. you can't see.
So if you could see it, then it wouldn't be an abstraction.
Well, my point follows kind of along the same line as I'm wondering if I was going to ask you, do you ever try to teach science without having a lab? And this, in essence, was a little bit of a laboratory to go with it. I mean, and if we'd had the instrumentation, we would have really found out what it was. And then it becomes real.
Would you have really found out what it was?
Oh, heck yes, I think we could find out. If we didn't have rules, that we couldn't open the box.
So what you're saying is the only way you can be certain is to open the box.
Unless we got very good instrumentation, other ways to find out. But the simplest way would be to open the box and see it.
Can we do that with nature? Can we open the box and see it?
Sure, parts of it.
And that's so that we're certain?
Pardon?
So that we're certain?
Well, you take it another step. It's just like photosynthesis in a leaf pick a leaf out there. You can analyze that, and you can get the carbon dioxide and oxygen flux on this, and you can set equations that'll bring you a little closer to what the truth is.
Can bring you a little closer to
what
the truth is.
Not truth. Yeah, okay.
Along that line, I had an experience about 40 years ago of teaching this college Sunday school class, and this Chinese doctoral candidate from China was sent to the class because of psychological and speech problems. And to be honest with us, he began, as soon as he came in, stuttering out and telling us that I can't believe in God. We said, why not? Because I'm a scientist. Oh, what does that mean? Because I can only believe in what I can see and touch and feel and measure. And before long, they asked him, do you believe in friendship? And he thought about it a while. No. So then they set about to prove to him the existence of friendship, which they did. But nonetheless, I'm asking, would you say 40, 50 years ago that science generally would say, with him, we can only believe in what we can see and touch and feel and measure? Has science changed?
What I would say would be, I think there are different ways of looking at scientific knowledge, and that what I'm trying to suggest is that perhaps there's another way of looking at scientific knowledge, and I think...
No, you used to speak of the physical sciences.
Yeah, yeah. I think what we're seeing back here is the notion that truth is attainable.
Well, I didn't mean to say that. I'd say you can add more knowledge to a process that's going on in nature or
But then you can apply that to another system too. You say, I have a certain body of knowledge that you learned in this photosynthesis. And you say, okay, let's move it to that one, and it seems to work there.
Well, in other words, you were saying the chemical elements, you know, you just, they told you that obviously you couldn't see those molecules in atoms. But when you get something and they say this is calcium carbonate and this is hydrochloric acid, you put the two together and you get the precipitate or it dissolves, then you begin to say, hey, you know, that's the way I believe that.
But isn't saying it's calcium carbonate, it's still an abstraction. And you're using language to sort the system out.
Yeah, I guess that extent it is, right? Because,
And so as we move along in time, ideas are going to change.
So you think that after a while there might be another periodic table that you put up on the wall for students, you know, in another century or 50 years?
I'm not willing to say that we've arrived at the truth.
Yeah, okay.
But we teach as if we've arrived at the truth.
Oh, okay.
And we shouldn't.
Well, maybe another way of talking about the abstractions is talk about interpretation.
Uh-huh.
So that photosynthesis is an interpretation. Hydrochloric acid is an interpretation. That is to say that these are symbols, linguistic symbols, which have their sense by their place amongst other linguistic symbols. And in that sense, we're talking about abstraction.
But do we hear the word interpretation in science? I don't think we say what we our theories are interpretations. We say they're it, that this is the explanation. We don't talk about different interpretations.
The discussion here, the last few minutes, you put up one of those sheets of being certain about, I think it was the first one. It changes this. You can think, we thought this was a nail clipper, because by squeezing it, we could determine a lot about its shape. But it could be anything. If it's abstract, anything that fits in this box, it could be the gift in the field in the parable yesterday. It could be anything we wanted it to be, and we'll never know.
I think what we do is gather more and more data to try to get more and more certain. But
we're as certain as we can be right now without running it through the x-ray machine at the airport. What we have to work with right now, it could be a nail clipper, it could be the key to the White House.
The question we're dealing with has some important implications, though. When Brian, I'm someone that also teaches science, and you know, I get students coming in that with the notion that science are a bunch of facts that you memorize and regurgitate on the test. And it's much more difficult to get across to them that science is a thought process about how you know things about the world, and it has some value, but it has some limitations as well. But the way that the image of science gets conveyed to the public is a little dangerous sometimes, because there's, in one sense, the public gets this notion that anything that's scientifically proven has got to be true, and that gets exploited in advertising in lots of ways. But on the other hand, whenever a scientific fact is disproven, then all of a sudden science is untrue. So that you're undermining what could be a valuable thought process, or putting too much into what is a limited thought process, and finding the balance between those and really getting something good out of science is a much trickier thing. At all appreciated.
How do you think practicing science stands in practicing scientists stand in what you're talking about? Do you think practicing scientists?
I think there's a fair chunk that buy into the notion that they can find truth. There's a certain amount of arrogance about many scientists.
Well, being a humanities person, I was intrigued by your description of the way scientists work, the theory is accepted if it works, so there's an inherent pragmatism in science. And that leads me to wonder then what place in society we ought to be giving scientists with respect to deciding other questions which don't lend themselves to pragmatic sorts of truths, like ethical issues. So that aside, the question of truth there, I think that science is about truth, but we need to define.
like, what kind of truth it's about. And then we need to think about the arts, I think, as well, to think about what kind of truth the arts is about. And there's an interesting point there about where they meet, where they form.
The imagination that we're talking about.
Yeah. Word abstract. I'm sitting here wondering if this also has to do with extract. That what you're talking about is that there are things, there is the natural world, it's there. But what science tries to do is to draw something out that isn't the whole. It may be an intensification of part of it, but it's one of the limits of science is that it's not the whole. We make a statement about the natural world, but we're always leaving something out in that statement. Is that part of what you're getting at?
Gee, I wasn't heading in that direction, but I mean, shall we explore that idea for a moment?
May not go anywhere.
Yeah, right. About extracting out of the natural world when you.
I'm just trying to understand what you mean by that we use abstract ideas to explain natural phenomena.
I guess I'm taking on a more simple level, and that is, you can see that we all were trying to build this picture together out here. You know, this picture that we're not drawing a picture of it; we're kind of creating a picture.
So it's more like abstract impressionism, where
you
look at the painting and think, "Huh, that makes me think of."
Yeah.
But it's not that; it's an allusion to that.
Yeah. Or you heard some people saying things like, this is like a button, or this is like something else. So it's not, you know, we're not saying it's this, we're saying it's like this.
I have doubts now about the monetary value of this experiment, because you said we can take the box with us, so I'm changing my mind on the nail clipper.
So you're using my cues to further develop your explanation. Yeah.
I'm a little bothered by this that science seeks truth. I hope I didn't say that before. I didn't mean to say that. I think science tries to get more knowledge about and explanations of what's going on in natural phenomena. And then you set limits. I mean, if we could say just like when they mined in Copper Mountain here, they knew what they were looking for in terms of gold, and there were certain ways you assayed for it and so forth, but there were limits. You know, certain types of rocks appeared. So there were limits. It doesn't say that rock, that we know everything there is about that rock, particular type of the rock, forever and ever.
I've not taken much science, and so I don't claim to be scientific, but every science book I have ever read has never said, and we at this point in time believe that this is igneous rock, or, you know, that this is what this is what you will get. You know, and maybe at some future, date, we'll change our mind.
What they said
is, this is it. You know, this is absolutely what it is. This is what you're going to get. You'll always get this, and you'll never get anything else. So I think what you were saying before is that science does present what they're doing as absolutes, and when we find that it changes, the lay people say, but you told us it was this. You know, how can you, and you said that there was no right answer, you know, no other answer, and I got that wrong on the test, because I said, you know, and now it's this. So I do think that they presented as absolute and not abstract.
Okay.
I wonder, though, I remember learning back in the 1960s at the University of Iowa, the physics people who came into the religion courses to talk about science, and they said that scientists no longer operate on the principle of verifying something to be true, but operate on a principle of falsifiability, so that you make your hypothesis and then work to disprove it, which leaves the truth claim very relativized all the time. So I haven't thought of scientists as making absolute truth claims for.
But that was
that's just a scientific method, though. You just set up a null hypothesis and disprove it, so you can do it.
But yeah, advanced science.
I think on the classroom level, when we're talking about elementary school or even high school, what the textbooks, even though
it is helpful for people who are thinking of science to keep it in mind that there are no absolutes or that we are working towards. I think it's important to develop the language and get that down. And if you, there are certain, I mean, I think we have to work within that, I mean, with this framework that in order for us to learn more, we will have to accept this and this. And for a scientist, you basically, you learn that this is this and this is this. And then as you progress more in the field, you learn, you actually probably progress towards uncertainty rather, I mean, away from the absolutes.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. And while it would be ideal that a child or someone without a strong science background could understand that, I think it would work better on a whole for people to, if they aren't going to pursue this, to have this basic language down. And I think that's what science in that elementary and secondary level is working towards. I don't know, as a small child, if I could grasp the concepts. But.
Well, it's building up that set of common assumptions that you work from. You assume that gravity is there. Someone explained that to you.
Right.
Oh, right. But what if you didn't assume gravity was there? What if you had someone in your group that said, you know, we turned our box, knowing we're sort of assuming that gravity is making that go down, and we know something about how gravity works, and so the way it falls tells us something about the nature of the object. But if we didn't assume that force, we might come up with a whole different explanation. But we do start with the assumption that we can know something, and that those things are reliable enough to proceed on the basis of those things. In order to ask other questions. Somebody else figured out gravity as the answer to some questions, so now we start with that answer and move on to the next question.
Mm-hmm. Just to kind of respond to some of these things that are out here, you know, I think I'm here saying these things in response to where things are at currently. That what I see is science being represented as truth. All-knowing, can ask questions about anything. And so that perhaps what I represent is the changes that have taken place over the years, that many of you seem very sophisticated about the philosophy of science. And I would say that, you know, as I've indicated, I didn't study any of this when I was a student in science. I mean, this is a revelation to me as a scientist.
Yeah.
So you know, maybe what we're saying here is there are no such thing as new ideas, we just keep going round and round. And you know, I think we're at a point, at least my feeling is we're at a point in science and science education where we need to go back to the philosophy and examine limitations, examine the knowledge, and things like this. So, well, we could talk more. Really, terrific.